Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us, brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It's a holiday weekend. Stock up. Enjoy. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the way by the outstanding barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. To those who celebrate Passover, happy Passover. To those of you who celebrate Easter, happy Easter on this Good Friday. Great to be with you. I was on Sirius this morning.
Surely you can't be serious.
I had to be. So I'm with Anthony Heron and John Jansen
this morning. What could have you possibly talked about? The Mueller report? No?
I explained in no uncertain terms that when it came to this show, there was no collusion. That the suit did this all by himself and that you and I had nothing to do with it.
That's right.
Right? Then we played back a few clips of the suit on the air, and they agreed only he could do that. So
we should have listened to you in the first place.
Obviously, Tommy Stevens was the topic, and look, it's now become apparent based on what his father Tom has said that hey, look, he's going someplace else. All right, and he made that, I thought, rather clear in his interview with Audrey Snyder from The Athletic. Okay. Look, this is one of those situations where Tommy Stevens is a fifth-year guy who really needs to have the assurance that he can be the starter, the absolute assurance that he can be the starter because he knows he can then put something on tape and get the NFL people interested in what he can do at the next level. So I understand where he's coming from completely. He was a loyal, supportive, great in the locker room guy who made his contributions on the field in whatever role they asked him to play, and he got his degree. Now, contrary to popular belief, I know there's a segment out there that thinks he got his degree last May, so he could have transferred last year. No, Tommy did not get his degree until December. All right. Now, he may have figured out a way maybe last year to accelerate somehow to get his degree, but it wasn't going to be last May. He graduated in December. And now he's at that point where, okay, now let's look at it from James Franklin's point of view. I can tell you, as somebody who stood there and watched this play out for a month, all right, I'm not going to tell you how many hours I stood out there. I don't know. I'll guess. I was out on that practice field 20 to 25 hours in the last month. Okay? And Tommy, the first couple of weeks, they kind of weaned him into it, you know, wearing sneakers. And then finally he got to the point where he could get out there and wear cleats. And then they got him active in drills. In my opinion, the coaching staff could not have handled the situation any better or smarter than how James Franklin handled it. Essentially, with John Reed, they did the same thing last year, and John Reed at that point was about 12 and a half months removed from his injury. But they still were careful with how they handled John Reed in the spring because there was no need to push John Reed. In the second half of the season, John Reed was really, really good. In fact, the last two-thirds of this past season, John Reed was really, really good. But I think we all acknowledge John got off to a little bit of a slow start. Part of that's rust. That happens. But now you look at Tommy Stevens. There's no game at the end of the blue-white game. I thought they handled him. Couldn't handle him any better. And when he worked out, every single time he was out there with units, he was always with the first unit. Not one time did James Franklin and Ricky Ronnie put Tommy Stevens with the second unit on reps. Zero. Not once. Every time it was always with the first unit. So, did Tommy Stevens do anything wrong here? No. He has his degree and was a loyal, hardworking guy that did whatever was needed to be done to have some sort of role on this team and help the team out. Did James Franklin do anything wrong here? No. He was also in a position as a head football coach where he had an open position where a three-year starter was gone and didn't have all the answers yet as to how healthy, completely healthy, Tommy Stevens was. So they were smart as to how they handled him throughout the 4 weeks of the spring, I thought. And saying, hey, look, and basically, hey, look, show us all that you're healthy and set to go. Because remember, he had the surgery a year ago, and then midway through camp, it bothered him again. So, I mean, you've got to be able to put everything into context as to where everything fits. And in this scenario, did anybody do anything, quote, wrong? No. So now you have to move on. Tommy Stevens is going to have to move on and find a place that he thinks is the place to showcase what he does. And fortunately, Penn State's recruited extremely well because they have a guy like Sean Clifford that's been sitting there. Oh, and by the way, let's not leave Will Levis out of this. That moving forward, I think they feel good about. The offense reminds me in some ways of the 1980 offense. Let's go back to 1980. You're like, 1980? Oh, ancient history. Okay. Now, the difference between the 80 offense and this offense is that the 80 offense had more experience on the offensive line. Jimmy Romano was a junior. Sean Farrell and Mike Munchak were both going from sophomores to juniors, so they were a little bit older up front. But you had a redshirt freshman quarterback, Todd Blackledge, who, by the way, edged out another redshirt freshman quarterback, Jeff Hostetler. You had a sophomore tailback in Kurt Warner, a redshirt freshman tight end in Mike McCloskey, a true freshman wide receiver in Kenny Jackson. Well, look at this team. All right, so now you have on this team redshirt freshman left tackle Rasheed Walker, fifth-year senior Stephen Gonzalez left guard, redshirt junior experienced guy Michael Mennett at center, right guard it's going to be a redshirt sophomore either way. It's either Mike Miranda or it's C.J. Thorpe, and then you have a redshirt junior in Will Fries at right tackle. All right, now you have a true sophomore and Pat Freiermuth, but right behind him is a fifth-year senior, Nick Bowers. You have a redshirt sophomore in K.J. Hamler, a redshirt sophomore in Mac Hippenhammer, a freshman, redshirt freshman in Justin Shorter, a redshirt freshman in Daniel George, and a sophomore in Jahan Dotson, right now as your wideouts. And you have a sophomore in Ricky Slade, a redshirt sophomore in Journey Brown, and a true freshman in Noah Kane, and then a true freshman in Devin Ford. Boy, in terms of the skill positions, they sure do sound similar, don't they? That was a very talented team in 1980 that went 10-2 and then set up the 81 and 82 teams. Now, obviously, I'm just trying to draw comparisons on experience. I can't draw comparisons on results, but I also think I can draw comparisons on talent. And that 80 team had a lot of young, developing talent on offense. I think this team is going to have a lot of young, developing talent on its offense if they can stay healthy. Transfer rules, the game itself. I want to talk about the game itself right now. If you are an older fan, and probably somebody that over the years has invested your money in the Nittany Lion Club, you've invested your money in season tickets, or maybe you can't afford season tickets, but you've gone to as many games over the years as you can afford on a game by game basis. And if you're middle-aged to an older fan, you're a big reason for the success of this program because you put a lot of your hard-earned money into it. My question is, not just at Penn State, but across the country, how does all this freedom of movement affect you as a fan? I mean, I know you have to think of it in different terms now. If you recruit a highly regarded, talented player, and they start to show in the first year and a half that it was justified that you were a highly recruited, talented player, you as a fan have to start thinking in three-year increments about said player. Saquon Barkley, he's done. End of the third year, he's done. You know that. Unfortunately, you've recruited a Miles Sanders, but after 3 years, he leaves. And the freedom of movement of players. Now, today, by the way, they did vote no or release the no vote on the possible grad transfer rule change, which was if you're a grad transfer and you don't get your master's degree in the year that you go to that school, that would cost a team a scholarship spot the next year. That was voted no. Cooler has prevailed. No offense. That rule, whomever proposed that rule, was out of touch with life. And it was voted down. They did pass a transfer rule today. If you're a walk-on, that you can transfer from one school to the other and don't have to sit out. That's the Baker Mayfield rule. No offense. There are the number of Baker Mayfields out there that can transfer from one school to the other school, Division I, start when one star, is a very small, tiny number. Okay, most walk-ons at schools are really good players, but they're not quite good enough with the Division I talent that's there, but probably would start at a school at a lower level. Most of these guys, when I talk to them at the quarterback club, have their... I'll ask them what other offers they had. Believe me, they had plenty of offers. But the offers weren't from Ohio State, Oklahoma, USC. So most of these walk-ons are really good players, where if they were at a different level, they would be probably a star or starting or something. But they choose to be here. So I'm glad to see that rule loosened up because, look, you're paying the freight wherever you go. You might as well be allowed to play. So that was a good rule. But I want to know, is all of this turning you off as a fan, as a longtime fan? When you look at attendance, Penn State's attendance has gone up and it's stayed stable. Michigan's is stable. Ohio State, believe it or not, fell back 5,000 a game this past year. And national attendance has gone down in college football. TV ratings, big games have been good. College football playoff games have gone down. You know, part of it is, I think, the timing of when the games are played. Another part is, to be honest with you, ESPN is not the best big game network I've ever seen. In fact, I think they're rather mediocre at televising big games. I don't think the way they do it helps the sport, other than the fact that they're showing it. But is all this movement and everything, is that affecting you as a fan as to what your thought process is? You know, you'd like to be able to latch on to. We talk so much about nobody. No, I don't think any other station on the planet talks more about wrestling than we do. But what's one of the great things about wrestling? You know darn well they're going to be there the whole time, unless they transfer some. Unless they want to, like, you know, like a Nick Soriano ends up transferring. But there's no pro outlet. Graduate transfers? Bah, that doesn't happen that often. If you're a wrestling fan, you know darn well if your guys, like Roman Bravo Young, right, wrestled this year. Penn State fans are counting on him being here the next 3 years. Football and basketball fans can't count on that. Can't. Hockey fans can't count on that. So wrestling's more the old way of doing things, which I think a lot of fans were very comfortable with and really enjoyed. This is an uncomfortable model. In football, basketball, and hockey, it's an uncomfortable model about freedom of movement. And I know young people are used to it. They're used to free agency. But the problem is with the 18 to 34-year-old group is everybody's desperately, desperately trying to get them engaged in sports. Desperately trying to get them engaged in watching it on TV. Desperately trying to get them engaged. So, I mean, even though they're the ones that are used to this kind of model because of the way the pro level is, everybody's working overtime to get them engaged. It's usually the middle-aged to an older fan that financially is the ones watching the games, going to the games. And you have to be concerned if you're starting to turn them off with the system that you have. And as I've said before, when it comes to paying student-athletes, I would be okay with playing football and men's basketball players if it was only football and men's basketball. All the money coming in and so forth, attendance, tens of thousands of people watching you play. All right? I'd be okay with it. Except my problem is I'm always trying to think of the other 702 student-athletes that are all involved in sports that can't financially support themselves. The model is designed to help them. So if they weren't in play, I'd be like, okay, I can understand why you want to pay them. But again, we're in that era now. That, to me, paying these student-athletes, I think, would be potentially another turnoff to longtime fans. And the next TV contract is going to be really interesting, starting with the Big Ten in 2022. Where are you going to get the money from? Are you able to keep the numbers stable? Are you able to get more money? Could be you're able to get more money. But I think it's just going to be an interesting cycle to see if they can maintain, get more, or if there's some sort of fallback. All right, we've got a lot going on today. John McMullen on the Eagles and the draft. Bob Grove on the Penguins going out in four straight games. And the King, Tony Knopp, joins us on Tuesday. That is the Suits' favorite segment.
His countdown clock is on to Tuesday.
It's his favorite segment.
Oh, yeah.
It takes away completely the aura of what he thinks sports is.
But how ironic, leaves this show to get into radio business and sales. And something about sports business made him turn the other direction. Am I missing something?
When it comes to radio sales, for example, Jamie's a genius. And then there's... Okay, we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet.
Brewers Outlet, the beverage superstock superstores, ready for all of your warm weather activities. Camping, picnics, grilling, visit Brewers Outlet first. For microbrews, imports, domestic specialties, they got them. Grab some pickles at the Pickle Bar, Steve Jones's favorite place. Snacks, Brewers Outlet has that covered. Soda, sports drinks, check. Weekly specials, too. And there's lots of convenient parking. So get all the refreshments everyone will love for your next outdoor gathering at Brewers Outlet, the beverage superstock superstore, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, and your holiday weekend special extra gold lager, 30-pack cans, $12.97. Imports, domestic microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day in the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The Beverage Supermarket. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined by John McMullen, NFL and Eagles insider for 97.3 ESPN South Jersey. John, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's get to the Eagles. I think what the drafting at 25. I know I saw one mock draft that had Byron Murphy of Washington. Obviously, I saw him play in person against Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl a couple of years ago. Liked him. What's your thought on the Eagles at 25?
Well, I think it's very unlikely they would take a cornerback in the first round. If you think about what they've done in the offseason, bringing back Ronald Darby, Jalen Mills is still here. Sidney Jones, they hope, takes a big leap forward. Howie Roseman, Joe Douglas just talked about him this past week. Rasul Douglas, Cravon LeBlanc, Avante Maddox. So I think a lot of national people kind of just look at best player available at times when they do these mocks. And that's a good way to go. I mean, it's always not a smart thing to reach, but when you're that deep at a particular position, I think you have to be a little bit smart about that. So I don't think the Eagles are going to go corner that early. And I look at how this team is built and what Howie Roseman believes, and that's you build up front on both sides of the football, offensive, defensive line, and he called this defensive line class historic as far as the talent and the depth. So I think that's a good place to start. It's going to be defensive line, and if it's not, it's probably going to be offensive line or trade down.
Right, which is also a possibility. It's a really good defensive line draft. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't know if it's historic, but it's really good. It's got a lot of bodies in there. I know that. But this is more than just a one-round draft. So on your list of areas, you know, as we take you through the 3 days, what do they need to address at least at some point, whether day one, day two, or day three?
Well, I think there are certain positions they do have to address. They did a good job in free agency with some Band-Aids. And if you think about guys like Jordan Howard at running back and Andrew Sandejo at safety, L.J. Fort at linebacker, Malik Jackson, defensive tackle, those were all obvious needs going into free agency. So it's good that they patched them up, but they still remain needs. And they still have to get deeper, running back as well. As I mentioned, there's no question they need sort of a third down receiving back to complement Jordan Howard. They need not only youth. Malcolm Jenkins is getting older, but you'd like to do a little bit better than Andrew Sandejo. So safety is also natural. And then without Jordan Hicks, at some point, even though linebacker might be the weakest part of this draft, at some point you have to address it.
Yeah, okay. So now you talk. I want to get to the Carson Wentz part of this. A lot of this is going to depend on how he does. So what's the read that you have, even though he's got more time to get himself back into gear? What's your read on Carson Wentz?
Well, I think we're all a little bit surprised. Carson spoke this week as well and said he wasn't completely healed from the stress fracture in his back. And most of us expected him to be a go for off-season work. And so that's a little bit of a concern. But remember, phase one and OTAs is just strength and conditioning and rehab anyway. Right. So it's not really important that he's 100% at this stage. They're not playing the game, obviously, for a long time. I do think when the on-field stuff starts in May, if he's not ready to go, I think it's fair to raise a little bit of antenna and ask what the heck is going on. But even that, I wouldn't panic. I would really panic if he's not 100% by training camp, and I can't imagine that would be the case. So I think he's going to be ready to go. I think the farther he is off the ACL and LCL tear, the better for him. And I think the hope is he gets back to 2017 Carson Wentz, and obviously if he does, that's going to be really good.
Is there anybody else that got banged up at the end of the year that you would have any concerns about them being ready to go?
Well, certainly not for training camp. There's a bunch of guys who aren't going to be ready for OTAs. The latest. I mean, Fletcher admitted this week. Remember, he got hurt in the Saints game. Yep. And he showed up on clean-out day with a walking boot on his foot. So I think that's one of those things where people talk about the drop from Alshon Jeffrey, and that probably kept the Eagles from a second consecutive NFC Championship game. But if they got there, they wouldn't have had Fletcher Cox or Brandon Brooks. So it would have been much more difficult. And Fletcher set his goal as training camp. Brandon, same thing. He's not going to be ready, obviously, coming off a torn Achilles. Jalen Mills with his foot surgery. Corey Clement still coming back from a knee injury. So there's a lot of guys that probably aren't going to be 100% for OTAs and some that are just making the goal August. And that's understandable with veteran players. The off-season work is more important for the younger guys who haven't proven themselves.
You talked earlier when it came to the draft and Howie Roseman saying it's a historically deep draft in the trenches, especially the defensive line. Quarterbacks are always going to be the ones where you sit back and say, hey, how about that? So I want to ask you about Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray, in terms of stature, is not the cookie-cutter NFL size. What do you think of Kyler Murray?
Well, I think it's fair to point that out, and I think a lot of people have seen things change a little bit, and they'll point to Russell Wilson or they'll point to Drew Brees or even Baker Mayfield, who's undersized from last year, but those are still the exception to the rule. It's a lot easier to play that position if you're 6'4", and history has proven that, and he's really small. So I think it's fair to have some concerns over that, but I do believe he's unique. I do believe he has the ability to change games with both his arm and legs, and this game's evolving. It's different than it was in the past, and there is more spread offenses, and there is more college traits coming to the NFL every year. So I think people have started to shift a little bit. I don't think there's any question he's going to be the number one overall pick to Arizona. That, to me, is strange only because of what the Cardinals did last year, trading up for Josh Rosen, firing a coach after just 1 year. I think that doesn't speak very highly of the GM there, changing his mind so quickly, Steve Keim. But nonetheless, he hired a coach who wants Kyler Murray, and I think he's going to get him. And if for some reason that changes, John Gruden's going to get him at number four. So he's not going to be on the board long. And that tells you a number of things. And one of them is that things have shifted a little bit in the NFL and the way people make decisions at a lot of positions, not just quarterback.
I want to stick with the Cardinals for a moment. because you talked about Kyler Murray, and I think you outlined exactly the way things are at Arizona. So there's no mystery when I ask this next question because you outlined it so well. What did the Cardinals do to the trade capital of Josh Rosen because of how they have handled this part of it?
Well, they haven't helped it, and that's the thing. And, you know, if you go to college and take any kind of finance class, they don't tell you to buy high and sell low, and that's exactly what they did. They not only took him in the top 10, they traded up to get him, and now they're hoping to get a second-round pick. And that's not good a year out. By the way, there's a lot of teams in this league who believe in Josh Rosen, believe he could be a very good starting quarterback in this league, but they know they don't have to give up more than that.
In fact, it may be a third that they get for him. They could get a third.
They could. If they can't get a two, I'd keep them. I really would. And then just sort of roll the dice and see who develops better. And if Kyler falls flat on his face, you have a backup plan. But either way, I honestly don't think Steve Keim keeps his job. And I never call for people's jobs. I don't like doing that. This is just textbook bad. And you can't give up on a coach after 1 year. You certainly can't give up on a top 10 quarterback after 1 year. He did exactly that. And then he hired a coach who evidently only wants to coach one quarterback. And that's not the way this league works. You can't get everybody you want. And if you have the number one pick every single year, well, that means by definition, you stink.
That means you're the Clippers. So every time you turn around, I remember Elgin Baylor as a player, but I think most younger people sit back and go, Elgin Baylor, I saw him every year making the first pick for the Clippers. So I know you have to keep track of what happens in the division too, John. What's your read on what Dave Gettleman's doing with the Giants?
Well, I don't have as big of an issue with the Odell Beckham trade as most people, and I'm surprised by some Giants fans, because you don't have to go back far in history to see that team did it before and did it by what I'm talking about is addition by subtraction. If you go back to the time when their two best skill position players were Jeremy Shockey and Tiki Barber, and they didn't want them around a young quarterback. They didn't want their personalities felt were toxic around Eli Manning, and it worked. They ultimately lost them and moved on and won two Super Bowls. And so I get the addition by subtraction part. People are very immediate, and they say, you didn't get enough. But let's wait to see if they what they get at 6-17. If they get a quarterback and an edge rusher, all of a sudden it looks much better. So that's number one. Number two, though, it amazes me, and I'm at these press conferences all the time. I don't know if people think coaches and GMs and personnel people are under oath, but they're not. They're also using subterfuge. They often don't tell the truth. And he knows he needs a quarterback, and ultimately I think he's going to get a quarterback at 6 or 17. He's talked about the Kansas City model with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. The difference there, though, is that the Chiefs were winning with Alex Smith, so it was easy. The Giants have been bad with Eli Manning, and Eli's been bad. I don't get people. Look, you can look at the jewelry, you can look at the surname and say, thank you for everything you've done for this organization, but he's a bad starting quarterback, and the Giants have to move on. It's killing.
Okay, one final question. I'm sure you count your lucky stars that you cover the Eagles and don't have to cover Daniel Snyder and what he thinks along the line.
But what's easier.
That's true. But how do you view the Redskins right now and where they are positioned?
Well, you're right. I mean, it starts with bad ownership, and then you have a bad break because Alex Smith is one of those guys who,
no question,
you know, he wins games, and people call him game manager, and they think that's an insult. Guys won a lot of games in this league, had a catastrophic injury, and that's difficult when you lose a guy like that, and they've signed Case Keenum. Ultimately, I think they're going to be the team that trades for Josh Rosen. I really think the Redskins are going to get him, and we'll see if they can begin to turn things around. But certainly, as we speak here in April, they're lucky it's April because they're not very good right now.
John, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the time today. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, thanks. Always appreciate it.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us. Passover, Good Friday. I'm going to guess that a certain someone who is always looking to get out of work anyway, I've cut out early today.
Actually, I still saw him in the building a little after 2:30. Yeah. Still in the building. Still getting after it.
Must have thought Roger was stopping by. All right, so...
No, he was here yesterday. Sends his best to you, too.
Ah, well, I send my best to him.
You bet.
I asked the Redskins question at the end deliberately for him. No, I'm not joking. I did.
Well,
That's the reason why I asked the Redskins question at the end.
It's really tough. You just wonder if Alex Smith's going to come back to be 100% back on the field. But, yeah, that was just such a horrific injury that he had to deal with last year. So, and they're on the hook with that money for a little while longer. So it makes you wonder if they're going to – I'm not saying they should deliberately tank this year and then go all out and get Tua Tagovailoa, but
Look, I'm not totally sold on Tua Tagovailoa. Hey, no offense, but did you watch the last four games of last season?
Yeah,
he looked
back
very good.
Yeah, was he at 100% though in the SEC? At least in the SEC conference championship game.
No, but
I mean, that was really the first time we saw him there with a little bit of duress going on.
Yeah, but you look at the Auburn game. Yeah, you look at the Citadel game. They were down 10-0. Yeah. Championship game? Eh. There's a lot of eh. Yeah, it kind of got the old happy feet thing going there. By the way, Sean Miller of Arizona and Will Wade of LSU, the two head football, the head basketball coaches that were subpoenaed to testify at the trial that begins on Monday, have been told that they will not have to testify. So that's really good news for them. Look, the trial is not about them anyway. This trial is about former agent runner Christian Dawkins. And prosecutors have said the bottom line to them is that Wade and Miller, while bringing headlines, their testimony would be irrelevant to the case. And Judge Edgardo Ramos granted the motion this morning, saying that whether the defendants had relationships with coaches whom they did not bribe was indeed irrelevant to the case. He did reserve the right to change his mind. Now, there is wiretap evidence that of Dawkins speaking with Miller and Wade. And according to them, the evidence would show high-level coaches. But they did not discuss bribes with the coaches on those phone calls. They said those phone calls would show Dawkins' intent while also showing signs of systematic cheating at the highest level. And the attorney said the evidence establishes clearly that Sean Miller's paying players at Arizona. Now, of course, he has denied that. But the two head coaches are not going to have to testify, at least as of right now, at the trial that begins on Monday. Interesting.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.